With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, September 27th, 2018. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Oakland, California, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And from the fringes of the LA Empire, I'm Roger J.
We have got a little breaking news to talk about regarding Tesla. We're going to get into speculation about what all we think Amazon's up to with retail as they go and venture out beyond just bookstores. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
That reprieve for classic Skype is about to end. Aww. Microsoft says it will stop supporting Skype 7.0 on the desktop November 1st and on mobile starting on November 15th. It will still be usable for a little while. That's the company's terms. After that, according to an editor's note on the blog.
Estonia's police and border guard board is requiring ID card producer Gemalto to pay a 152 million euro penalty after 700,000 ID cards were found to have generated the card's code keys in a way that they could be stolen. Private codes should be generated on the card's chip to ensure security.
And security researchers at Duo discovered a vulnerability in the Apple interface used to enroll Apple devices in mobile device management systems, or MDMs, something you use in the enterprise when you want to have a bunch of company iPhones all enrolled at the same time. You can roll out your custom apps, etc. The researchers spoofed serial numbers of enrolled devices to connect malicious devices. They were pretending to be the enrolled devices. And then they were able to do all kinds of stuff. Look at company mail, et cetera, gain basically trusted access. Apple's device enrollment protocol supports authentication, but it doesn't require it. So if you make it happen, then you wouldn't be vulnerable to this. But since Apple doesn't force you to, a company might not have it turned on. The researchers warn that serial numbers alone should not be relied on to let devices join corporate networks. All right, let's talk about this breaking news, Justin.
Yes, the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission has filed a lawsuit on Thursday against Tesla CEO Elon Musk, alleging securities fraud. The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court in Manhattan. Happened for the reason that you think. Yeah. Going private at 420, funding secured. Turns out that is fraud in the eyes.
Yeah, and the case says, in truth and in fact, Musk had not even discussed, much less confirmed, key deal terms, including price, with any potential funding source. So coming in hard with this filing. They're not saying like, well, this kind of went over the line. They're saying this was fraud, plain and simple. Now it's up to a court to decide if they're right with those claims, but this is not a tepid response.
No, it is not. Musk has explained that whole fiasco, which obviously did not happen, that this was there were advanced talks with the Saudi Arabian Wealth Fund, for which I assume, considering how much money they're sitting on, probably felt that there was not going to be much of a haggling at the price that he set. But still, rules are rules, and this is what the SEC is going to sue him for.
Yeah, and Musk still believes that what he said wasn't false. He's like, yeah, no, I had it mostly arranged, but, and this is why you have courts, there's a difference between what you intend and what people read. Anybody who studies semiotics, you know, knows it as signed, signal, and signified. What Musk may have meant doesn't matter. It's what people thought he meant when they read his statements. And it makes a pretty compelling case in this filing that what he said was, in fact, misleading.
An Australian teenager who hacked Apple systems over several months and downloaded sensitive data has avoided jail time. Now, the adult was 16 years old at the time that the hacking began, so was a minor at the time, accessed Apple's internal systems and copied around a terabyte of data and authentication keys, a magistrate told a children's court in Australia. Now, Apple contacted the FBI and Australian police, subsequently raided his home. Apple then said the customer's personal data, that customer's personal data was not compromised and that staff had discovered the unauthorized access, contained it, and reported it to law enforcement.
This is the hacky hack hack kid, right? That was the name of the folder that he stored stuff in. I mean,
well, and the whole, you know, his defense attorney, you know, sort of said like, he was a child. He's just like really into Apple and was like so excited about Apple that he, you know, wanted to see how far he could get, which is not necessarily false, but the fact that he was a minor at the time is working in his favor very much so.
This is pure 80s style hacking. This is not malicious hacking. This is hacking. I'm comfortable calling this hacking because even though he broke the law, he didn't mean to hurt anyone. He wasn't out to leak this stuff, sell this stuff. And I'm not trying to justify it or say he shouldn't, pay for the crime or whatever. But this is someone who really just wanted to see what he could do. And once he got in, kind of got high on the like, man, I'm kind of like an Apple employee right now. How cool is that? I understand that is what I'm saying.
Well, this is the happy ending, right? Rules are rules. You violate the law. You do need to face repercussions. But like you said, it's not like he immediately went to some board where he was trying to sell the information. As far as all available law enforcement investigation into this can turn up, this was him trying to prove his hacking prowess. I'm glad he's avoiding jail time for that crime.
Yeah, we don't know his name. It's protected by Australian law, but there would be a free hacky hack hack kid campaign if he went to jail. And this is a better way to treat it.
Also, you know, Apple, maybe hire him. He's pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, folks. This is a big story today. If an advertiser has legitimate info about you, Facebook lets that advertiser target people who list that info in Facebook. So, for example, you've given your phone number to the plumber, and the plumber has a list of phone numbers of his clients and goes to Facebook and says, hey, I want to advertise a 20% coupon to everybody who has this phone number. So far, so good. But Facebook only knows your phone number by your admission, if it's in your profile info, which some people do that. Not everybody does, but some people do that. However, Facebook also will use info you provided for security reasons and info that other people have about you in their context that maybe you never gave Facebook. In the first case, you're giving info for a single and important purpose, security, and it's being targeted to you, to advertised to you. In the other case, you gave it to a friend and you don't have any control over it being used to target you. And in fact, Facebook claims it would be illegal to give you control because that's information in somebody else's profile. Gerard Hari Venkadari, Pyotr Sapiensky, and Alan Mislove of Northeastern University, along with Elena Lucarini of Princeton University, tested this thoroughly and report their findings in a paper published in the Proceedings on Privacy-Enhancing Technologies. So this isn't a BuzzFeed report, has a source who says, this is, we tried it out rigorously using controlled circumstances where we only knew this phone number would show up if it was causing one of these things to happen. A Facebook spokesperson said, yeah, we use the information people provide to offer a more personalized experience, including showing more relevant ads. And users can, and I'll add should, use something besides a phone number for two-factor authentication if they wish.
Well, okay, so the fact that Facebook is doing this, once Facebook statement is like, we're not denying that this is happening, but here's why we're doing it, and it's because it's for, you know, the greater good of our users and data in general. Okay, well, so how should they have done this differently? Should they have spelled out a little bit more clearly? Yeah, if you do like 2FA for, you know, with a phone number or something like that, or you give this information to a friend, this might end up in an advertiser's territory, and you didn't know about it. I mean, how could they have?
Don't use it.
Communicated it differently.
Don't use it.
No.
Period. When I'm giving a phone number for a security purpose, that is the only reason to use that phone number. That is it. It's for security only. Nothing else.
Well, okay. So, so my question stands: is Facebook should have said this is going to be used in a different way? Are you okay with this? They didn't.
At the very least, if they're going to do it anyway, they should have told you. Yeah.
When you set up 2FA, which is another step that people have to take, and that there are many ways that you can do 2FA on Facebook. One of them is with your phone number. That they should have some sort of little checkbox that lets you know, hey, I heretofore understand that this will be used to target relevant.
But honestly, that will dissuade
that experience.
That will dissuade people from setting up security. Yeah.
Here's my thing to you, though. This, yes, you can complain ad nauseum why it does not benefit the scorpion to sting the frog in the middle of the pond. But
is different, though. This is playing with security. It's one thing to say, like, hey, we're Facebook, of course we're going to advertise to you. And it's another thing to actually use something that requires trust. Like, this is for security for a business purpose. For me, well over the line.
Even stuff as silly as like, what's your birthday? Don't worry, we won't post this anywhere. We'll never go to your newsfeed. It's just, you know, it's just for us to know that you're
going into the profile. That's different. Like, that's like, yeah, hey, you're giving this stuff in exchange for this. But security information should be firewalled for multiple reasons.
So you're telling me I shouldn't be targeted ads because I knew my mother's maiden name? Like, I shouldn't be getting ads for doilies about mom's maiden name is.
If they do the backup security questions are stupid anyway. But if they're like, you know, what was your first pet? Yeah, they shouldn't be targeting you on your first pet. They shouldn't be using that to data mine you.
Yeah, that's
shouldn't be havoc the fish forever.
Also, the other one is more nefarious, where it's like, I have no control over, I gave Justin my phone number, right? Justin uploads his contacts to Facebook without asking me. Why should he? He was using it to make it easier to use Facebook. And now Facebook is targeting me with that information, which I have no control over. And they tell me we can't give you control over it. That one gets me too.
The problem that Facebook faces is that as people learn more about how they make money and learn more about ad targeting, I believe the more they will be freaked out about it. And on these edge cases where, yes, there is a good moral debate, I think these are the matches that light a much larger fire that an educated user base can react to.
And I don't think the security one's a moral debate, but we could go on forever about that.
Sure. We just had a moral debate. All right, moving on. A research study, the Lancet Child and Adolescent Health Journal, found that children aged 8 to 11 who limit recreational use of screens for less than 2 hours a day performed better in tests of mental ability. The study only found a correlation that indicates further study is needed to discover causes and differentiate among type of recreational screen use. There was some indication that video games and educational videos might have cognitive benefits. The study surveyed 4,500 children with a questionnaire and administered cognitive tests.
So really, it's not that the screen time is harmful. It's that too much screen time is seeming to be harmful.
Right.
And that's actually, you know, and that's an interesting thing. It's like, well, I mean, none of us are children, but I mean, even as adults, I think that there's a lot of merit to the idea. Sorry, not to be funny, but there's a lot to take away from the idea of, yes, having this information is helpful. Yes, gaming can be good for your cognitive skills, but too much of it may take away from other things.
Well, and it's not just too much, it's the type, right? In fact, what they found was that video games might actually have cognitive benefits. And that's the other thing is, this is a study that found a correlation. They're not saying any of it means anything yet. They're saying this indicates that maybe you should limit screen time if you want to be safe, and we should proceed with more studies and more rigorous studies to figure out exactly what all of this means. But at the very least, it's that outside of educational stuff, limiting screen time probably on the safe side of things.
I also wonder how much of this is also a leading indicator of a relationship between parents or children being acknowledged that it larger screen time could often also mean that they're not being engaged by their family, that at least on the level of somebody that does not have that kind of screen time. So I think that this is an interesting interesting data point. But I do wonder what we're going to learn the fuller picture of.
Yeah, the indications that video games and educational videos might have cognitive benefits would be that differentiator of, like, is it just that they're using a screen, or is it what they're doing on it?
As the one parent here, I will say that screen time is always on the top of my mind, and the reasons for it are like a multitude of reasons, right? If your babysitter's out and you gotta do work with your kid, you're gonna give your kid a tablet to keep them busy while you're doing work. If they're sick from school and can't go to school, can't engage with other kids, teachers, you're going to give them a tablet or something to keep them busy in the same way that you used to babysit your kids with TVs. It's not an ideal situation, but is one of a multitude of things that parents will do in order to manage the situation as best they can.
Consumer Reports says we're recommending Microsoft Surface PCs after last year not recommending them because of what it considered poor predicted reliability in comparison with laptops from other brands. So, tables have turned. The Surface Pro, the 2017 model, the Surface Laptop, and the Surface Book 2 do score well enough to be recommended, Consumer Reports now says. However, the Surface Go continued to get docked for poor performance and battery life.
I think you meant the surfaces have been turned, not just
the Surfi.
The Surfi. Yes. Is that it? I mean, yeah, this is good news. I actually really liked my Surface Book, and I remember when Paul Thurrott was out there complaining about it being buggy because there were some problems with USB. There were problems with device drivers and Bluetooth.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Screens of death. I just never really ran into them that often. Not saying I never ran into them. I can't imagine if if it's even more reliable than that, this is maybe I should go back and try out a Surface Book 2, because I really liked the Surface Book as it was, and it was a little slow and the power fan ran too often and stuff like that. So this is great news for Microsoft.
Sure. I think obviously there is a place for the Surface line for a lot of people that are fully plugged into a PC ecosystem, and I'm glad that Consumer Reports is recommending them. However, I don't know. I know that you have, Tom, you know this probably more than anybody, as somebody who has been at this tech news game for a very long time. Consumer Reports, more or less news stories in the last 5 years about them not recommending stuff than previous 5 years, or the same?
That's a good question. I wouldn't want to answer it without taking a look. The perception is very much what you're hinting at with your question, yes. You know, is that there are more of them, but I don't know if that's just because we have more technology devices now. And so maybe we're seeing those stories crop up as technology becomes more mainstream. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right. Amazon announced the Amazon 4-star store, which honestly to me sounds like it ought to be like a donut shop or a restaurant.
Well, but, and also, like, wouldn't it be a 5-star? Well,
no. Amazon 4-star noodles.
Right. It's like 4-star meaning not 5-star?
Not 5-star. Okay. I know. There's that aspect too, right? Like, so it's the stuff that's okay. It's pretty good. It's better than average.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to have a 5-star corner. Like,
oh, totally.
Like, you have to be this tall to ride.
And I guess the average is well above 4 of the products. But let me get to the point of the store. It's opening in New York, and nothing below 4 stars rated on Amazon gets in the store unless it's a top seller or it's new and trending on Amazon. They'll make some exceptions in those cases, but most of those are usually 4 stars as well. Stores open 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Sundays. It's on Spring Street in Soho. Shoppers who are Prime members will pay the Amazon.com price for their purchases. If you're not a Prime member, though, you pay a list price, which is almost always more expensive, although they'll sign you up to be a Prime member right there in the store. So there you go. It's a very expensive loss leader to get you to sign up for Amazon Prime. But yeah, the idea is, like, we know these are the things New Yorkers are buying. So we're going to have a section on, like, hot trending items in New York. We know that these are just totally good items overall on the Amazon store. So we're going to stock that stuff. It makes sense from that end going in. Does it make sense as a shopper as to why you decide to go into this store?
Well, you know, you mentioned Spring Street in Soho, Tom, and which is anybody who hasn't been to Manhattan, it's a huge shopping area. There's, you know, all the boutiques are down in Soho. So the idea that you would get a lot of foot traffic into the store, that's part of it. If you can convert a lot of people who are not Prime members to being Prime members because they're going to get a discount because they're already there, you know, and they want to buy this item that's, you know, 4 stars or, you know, new and trendy or whatever. Okay, that's fine. The loss leader part of it is real, but Amazon's got the money. So it seems to me that Amazon is saying, all right, let's put a store in a huge traffic area and see how many people we can convert into Prime members.
I am here for every inch of this gimmickry, because that's what I think it is. The idea of the 4-star thing is something that is just, it's a conversation starter. It implies, oh, this is quality. This isn't just Amazon trying to put stuff in there. It also gets away from, we talked earlier about Facebook and the idea of a user base understanding exactly how ads get targeted to you. It leads away from Amazon saying, we know what you want. Come and buy it from us, which is a creepier kind of initial selling point. So it just says, look, we know quality. Enough people have bought all these things that your fellow
peers, other humans like you.
Yeah, right, right.
That they have decided that this is it. We have long talked about what an Amazon retail play was. And we began to see it with the bookstores. We obviously saw a gigantic purchase in Whole Foods, and we have another story about that we can get to in a second. But I think that Amazon should get creative with stuff like this. And instead of going headlong into, now here's the Amazon does Best Buy thing, then do fun ideas like this. I think that it is a great idea for Amazon.
It's the boutique shop. As soon as Sarah used those words, it all fell into place for me. And folks who haven't been to Spring Street like sections, which exist in most major cities. I've seen it in St. Louis and I've seen it in Detroit. It's not just a New York thing. There are those shops that just have lots of cool, funky items. And they'll have a little kitchen section and they'll have a little pets section. And it's, you know, lots of clothes, nifty clothes and French pillows that are way over expensive. This is that store. This is Amazon's version of that store. Like, here's cute, cool, funky items that usually are curated by a person who runs the store who has great taste. In this case, it's curated by Amazon employees who are looking at the incredibly long list of 4.4-star and above items and picking stuff. And by the way, there's a little red herring going on out there where people are like, oh, so if I game the system, I can get in the store. Granted, they are not going to pick up no. Just because you get 4 stars or above doesn't mean you get in the store. They're going to be picking what goes in there.
Although, if it did match what they wanted to sell and they could get it in quantity, mm-hmm. which is another reason, then it gives them the ability to take advantage of a viral kind of moment like that.
Sure, sure. So what else, before we move on, what else could they do? So they've got a boutique shop, they've got a bookstore, they've got a grocery store in Whole Foods.
They have multiple grocery stores.
Yeah,
right. Amazon Go.
Yeah. They've got Amazon Go, right, yeah.
this whole idea of having a brick and mortar store in a, you know, in an area of New York where you got a lot of tourists, you got a lot of foot traffic, you got a lot of people who at least come in and browse. Well, you can't have all of Amazon store in there. Is it going to be a grocery store? Well, no, that doesn't really make sense either, right? Because most people are, you know, they're trying to buy, you know, stuff, right? Not groceries. So it makes sense that Amazon was like, okay, well, how do we limit this to something that we could put into a store that makes sense? We'll call it the 4-star store. It's all the, you know, the stuff that's really popular on Amazon, which is kind of funny because Amazon, the whole idea is that it's like what's popular for Justin or Tom might not be popular for me, and that's fine. And that's how Amazon works really well. But the best of the best.
Well, and they're also doing these items are often purchased together in store.
Yeah.
That too.
So you can pick them up as a bundle. I think a hardware store would be a good play for them.
Oh, you want to know what? I was actually thinking.
And that's probably a lot of the 4-star stuff.
Well, yeah,
I'm thinking office supplies. It's like a lot of the essential stuff that they do their own version of. Because you wouldn't have to have a ton of foot space, unlike a Office Max or a whatever. Like you could literally just have a little like, hey, what do I need? Gigantic reams of paper? Come on over. Pick it up in two seconds.
Clothing shop. You know, they have a lot of Amazon Basics clothing. Real quickly, before we move on, Gizmodo obtained a 45-minute video sent from Amazon to Whole Foods team leaders advising them how to combat union organization, saying our business model is built upon speed, innovation, and customer obsession, things that are generally not associated with unions.
Man. They might have a point, but you're gonna upset some people by saying so.
Don't expect don't expect there to be union shops in any of these retail outlets.
Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. It's our union of sorts, but we're, you know, don't strike. Just keep submitting stories and voting on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. In fact, you don't have to choose between the two. You can hang on both places. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
And go there, email us. Do the emails and Sarah will read one like this one.
Correct. We read an email from Rohan yesterday. I wasn't on the show, but said Google was missing out on the smart home market by focusing on the tech instead of the functionality. In response, Eric wrote in today and said, I also think that Google's missing an opportunity on a smart home product I would love to see. They're in a unique position to create it. Google makes the Nest Protect smoke detector, a mesh Wi-Fi system, and a smart assistant. I'd love to see these three things combined into one product. One device you could mount on the ceiling in most rooms. It would give you a house-wide smoke detection, mesh Wi-Fi, and smart assistant, especially if Google could find a way to price this device in the range of $200 to $250.
I like this idea. The voice assistant kind of goes without saying with all this smart stuff and definitely would need to be included. But having smoke detector, carbon monoxide detectors that are also mesh Wi-Fi repeaters. I don't know if there's logistical reasons why you couldn't do that, but that makes so much sense to me. If my Eero's were also carbon monoxide detectors, that just saves me a few outlets and stuff that batteries I'd have to change and stuff. Love this.
I do too. Thank you very much, Eric, for the follow-up. And thank you also to Justin Robert Young for being with us this fine Thursday. Justin, what has been going on with you?
I don't know if everybody's noticed, but there's a big political brouhaha today.
And what?
And every day.
All about it.
You don't say.
Yeah, in my free political newsletter. You can get that at freepoliticalnewsletter.com. This would also be a good time to subscribe to my politics podcast, Politics, Politics, Politics. All you got to do is go to your pod catcher or pod place of choice and search for Politics, Politics, Politics. If you see a little bird on it, then that's me. And we're going to have a little bonus episode that'll go up today with my reaction to both sides of the hearing and my thought on whether or not we will have a new Supreme Court justice over the next few days. Go ahead and check it out.
So yesterday, I thanked everyone for pushing us up above the mark of having one more patron than last month and said, let's see how many more we can have. And we immediately lost five people. So maybe I should just project more panic. We are still one more patron than last month, but will it last? We have to sustain it for three more days. Anyway, there's lots of cool reasons to support us directly. Please explore them at patreon.com/DTNS. And don't forget, I'm going to be at the Outlier Podcast Festival September 30th at 1 p.m. in Los Angeles doing a workshop on preparing content for your podcast. Check it out at outliercs.com. That's OUTLIERCS.com.
We love your feedback. Our email address is a great way to give us feedback. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you can join us live, it's a lot of fun. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
It's our September roundtable tomorrow. We're going to be talking hardware with Ryan Schrout, Patrick Norton, and Len Peralta will be there too. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.